one of my first acts as minister was back in March, and we announced that we would establish two new shelters in Brisbane and Townsville. And it's the first time that there's been new government-funded refuges in Queensland for more than 20 years. So, you know, we recognise that we need to do a better job of supporting women when they make that brave decision to reach out for help.
So in your response to the report, you've also, there's been a change in legislation and two sets of legislation. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so there's been a number of pieces of legislation that have been passed through the Parliament last year. One of those was to make it mandatory for magistrates to consider ouster orders. So where it is safe to do so, we want to make sure that more women and children can remain in the family home and perpetrators have to leave. So that's why we've made it mandatory for ouster conditions to be considered by magistrates. Ouster conditions mean that perpetrators are excluded from the family home or from going anywhere near it, and victims can remain in the home. And what that means is that the family is still connected to their community, to their family, to their routine. Kids can stay at school. Simply being able to continue friendships and support networks in the children's schooling can make a huge difference to the well-being of victims of violence. So we want to make sure that those orders are considered more often. And alongside with that, we are providing more money for security upgrades to homes, so magistrates will have a discretion to decide whether or not an ouster order is appropriate and upgrades are needed to the family home.
Can I ask what happens with the men? Will there be more services for men? Because, I mean, we have to look at perpetrator awareness. There's been a lot of money put into safety for women and raising the awareness of what is actually happening, but we really have to look at the illness behind violence and what's happening with men and what happens to men if they can't go back to the home then. What happens with them? I mean, there might be some situations where the woman is and the kids aren't safe to be there, whether there's an AVO or not. So, you know, or some kind of order placed on the situation. So, I mean, what happens with the men?
Yeah, look, you're absolutely right. We can't stop domestic and family violence unless we involve men. And we need to think about how we deal with perpetrators and whether or not they can be rehabilitated. And it's a vital piece of the puzzle. And we are increasing funding for perpetrator programs right across Queensland. It's an area that government has traditionally underfunded. You know, rightly so, the focus has been on keeping women and children safe. But unless we start working with these violent men and, you know, working with them in perpetrator programs to stop their violent behaviour, we won't be able to keep women safe. In terms of where men will go if there is an ouster condition, usually perpetrators will stay with family or friends. There are services available, men's homelessness services. There is brokerage funds provided to services to make sure that if men are without a home, that they can be placed in homeless refuge. So perpetrator programs are a really important part of preventing domestic and family violence, and there's some good recommendations in the Not Now, Not Ever report about making sure that we do fund perpetrator programs to help work with these men and their violent behaviour.
I mean, we have some fantastic programs in Aboriginal health services and Torres Strait Islander health services, men's groups and men's cultural groups that are really addressing the issues around male violence and the cycle of male violence. And I think personally that some of these models from these groups should be used across mainstream. I mean, it's just an idea, but I really feel that it's a leading example of what does work in communities.
Yep. Absolutely. As I sort of travelled across Queensland talking to communities about tackling domestic and family violence, I've met a lot of elders who talk to me about some of the programs that are being run in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities around violence, and I'm really keen to continue to work with them in tackling domestic violence in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities and seeing whether or not this is a model that we can roll out more broadly across Queensland.
Minister, you also talked about other legislation. So does the other legislation include the way that police handle complaints? Can you just talk a bit more about the other changes to legislation?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've changed the process now when someone comes to a police station and discloses domestic violence, that is seen as a priority. So we've changed the way police handle complaints. We've rolled out body-worn cameras for police on a trial on the Gold Coast. We know that so many of the barriers to seeking justice in domestic violence situations is that often victims don't want to make a complaint. There is a lack of evidence. Making sure that we've got police officers who are recording when they come to a home and there's an incident of domestic violence will mean that more and more applications are brought to court, which is really important. We've also amended the legislation so that victims of domestic violence can be afforded a special witness protection so they don't have to go to court and face the perpetrator in the same room. They can give evidence via video link or through other methods. So that's a really important legislative change. And of course, we've increased penalties for breaches of domestic violence orders. Maximum penalties have been increased from 5 years to 7 years, really to send a strong message to perpetrators that breaches of domestic violence orders are unacceptable and the community believes it's unacceptable.
We've had too many incidences where women have felt that they've gone to talk to the police and then they haven't been taken seriously and then, you know, something happens. So it's really great that there's going to be improvements in the way that the police do handle complaints.
One of the other things we're doing is really looking at an integrated response in local communities to tackling domestic violence, and that involves police, support services, our hospitals, corrections, the courts, all working together, sharing information to get a better idea of the risk that a woman is under and how dangerous the perpetrator is. And police have been really engaged in this integrated response model. And, you know, we're sending a very, very strong message that the community won't tolerate domestic violence. And we're sending a very strong message to police about how they respond when domestic violence is disclosed.
Minister, let's talk about the Indigenous space. I mean, domestic and family violence and male violence is a very mainstream issue. It's not just affecting families in First Nations communities, but let's talk about the Indigenous space. I understand that you have an integrated service model that's also being piloted in Logan City. Can you talk about the changes for First Nations people?
Yeah, so we have three integrated response trials. The first one that we announced it would happen in Beenleigh and Logan. There will be another integrated response trial in a regional community, and we're also going to trial an integrated response in a discrete Indigenous community. So we know that how things work in different parts across the state, whether it be urban, regional or a discrete community, and we'll have different needs. So we haven't announced the location for that discrete integrated service at this stage, but we hope to have an announcement on that soon.